welcome back. This is Kevin Woodman of my brand new podcast, Philadelphia Eagles Talk. This is episode 8, and I'm a little bit all over the place because I just recorded an entire episode of this podcast, which I typically do on Mondays, basically talking about the uncertainty of Doug Peterson's job. And then I go to check my phone once I finish recording after about a half an hour, and it turns out that Doug Peterson has been fired, or at least he's gone. I'm not really sure how they term it, but he is out as head coach. Doug Peterson is gone, which I mean, the podcast, I'm kind of glad because the podcast that I recorded I'm not glad that Doug Peterson's gone. I'm kind of glad that there was a resolution because the podcast that I recorded, I was all over the place. I didn't know what to think. I was looking at this very clearly where this could go in two different directions where the Eagles are either going to, you know, try to move forward with Carson or they're going to try to move forward with Doug. And I really didn't know which one was the better option based off of the fact that I didn't have enough information. And I was really, all I said in that podcast was, we're going to have to wait and see what happens. Well, what happened already happened. And I was very clear in this now unaired episode that will never hear the light of day. I was very clear in that episode that I think that the crux of the conflict after we've heard for so much that Doug Peterson is going to be back, well, there were so many signs pointing to the fact that Doug Peterson was going to be back. I was very clear, and this is something that hasn't come out, and I don't think there's nothing to support this, and I don't know if anything ever will come out. But I've said in previous podcasts that I think what the Eagles' plan for the offseason was that if they're going to give Doug Peterson another try, they were going to bring in coordinators under him that were head coach and waiting style coordinators, hot young offensive and defensive coordinators. They wanted to give the offensive coordinator that they brought in the play calling duties because no real good offensive coordinator is going to come here unless they have play calling ability, unless they can call plays. That's typically something you almost have to hire a hot young offensive coordinator, a hot young offensive mind. You almost have to hire them to head coach to bring them here because that's typically how it goes. It's an NFL. The NFL is run by offenses now. It's an offensive league now. There used to be a time where defensive guys got coaching jobs. It just doesn't happen very much anymore. It's all about offense. So it really doesn't surprise me that to me, that was the crux of the issue. After the first meeting and then all these rumors came out that Doug wanted Press Taylor to be the offensive coordinator, which I'm sure that the Eagles ownership did not want to hear because, like I said, their plan, even though it hasn't come out in any way, their plan is we want to bring in a guy that can essentially take your job. That's really what they wanted to do, and Doug obviously didn't want to wait around for that. So he said, look, I want Press Taylor because he's got a good case. That the offense, the Eagles look at the offense and say that the Eagles offense was failing under you, Doug. It was failing under you because they didn't score 30 points the entire season, which is pretty unheard of. They're the only team that didn't do that in an offensive run league. So if they said, this is the issue, we want to bring in a guy to help you out. That's probably how they termed it. Bring in a guy to help you out, but we want him to have play calling duties because most offensive guys won't come here unless they have play calling duties. And Doug just saw the writing on the wall and he said, look, the offense didn't play great, but there's plenty of evidence to point to Carson Wentz. And I'm sure he had, you know, gameplay footage of Carson Wentz just missing wide open reads of him completely, not seeing the play prior to the snap. I mean, there's a lot of examples of Carson Wentz just looking like he never played football before. And that when Jalen Hurts came in, the offense looked pretty good for a couple of games. Now, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that you're now hearing some backtracking that, well, the Eagles might actually want to bring Carson Wentz back because Jalen Hurts, his trajectory definitely went down after that first couple of games. I mean, his trajectory went from looking like Russell Wilson, a young Russell Wilson in the first two games, to the last two games looking like it might have been a mirage. Because, I mean, just look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Washington football team playoff game. They had a guy starting last minute named Taylor Heinicke, I think was his name. The guy looked like an NFL coach. He looked really good. Like, he kept them in the game in a playoff game with, like, nobody, like, not much offensive around him. I mean, the Washington team doesn't really have a lot of offense to begin with. But he looked really good. So is it just the same case scenario where, you know what, when guys come into the league and they play – and they don't really have the NFL doesn't have a lot of game tape on them. They don't know what teams are going to want to do with them. They don't know how teams are going to want to run the offense with them. It's really a lot of vanilla defensive calls because they don't know what to expect. There's nothing. There's no book on them. Is it that Jalen Hurts had the book written on him because the last two games really didn't look that great? I mean, like I said, Taylor Heinicke didn't look. I don't think that the Redskins are banking on him as the quarterback of the future, even though he had a great game against Tampa Bay. I don't think that it's very. It could be very similar circumstances. I'm sure that you're never going to hear from Taylor Heinicke again. He's not going to go off and get a franchise QB deal somewhere, or the Redskins aren't going to try to grow him in the organization. That was just a one-off. Was Jalen Hurts just a one-off the first couple of games? And if that's the case, did they really feel that way? How does Howie survive this? The decision to draft Jalen Hurts in the first place was a terrible decision. They've already fired Doug, or they already got rid of Doug. So I don't understand how you can't, if they're starting over like that, I don't understand how you can't start over and get rid of Howie. I just don't understand it. One argument would be that Howie's had, it's a pretty good track record of picking coaches. This will be the fourth head coach that Howie Roseman has been a part of bringing to the Philadelphia Eagles. And if you look at the previous three now, with Doug being one of them and Andy Reid being the original one, two of them have won Super Bowls, which is a pretty good track record. And the third one, Chip Kelly, he at least won the division. He won the division while Howie Roseman was in power. Then he chased Howie Roseman to the other side of the building, basically got him exiled. And sure enough, that's when the Eagles roster went to crap. That's when Chip Kelly destroyed it and they went downhill. So before Howie actually resurrected it in 2016 and 2017, when he came back and he became, you know, full ownership of the, or full GM again. So there are some arguments that I don't know if Howie's the guy or not making the calls, if Jeffrey Lurie's the guy with the golden eye, but they've had a pretty successful, even Chip Kelly, who definitely didn't end well, he still started out pretty well, and I think he had a career winning record in Philadelphia. So in the Howie Roseman era, since the early, what was it, late 1998 or 1999 when they brought Andy Reid in, since then they've had a lot of winning and they've had a lot of success at picking head coaches. So maybe, I don't know if Howie's that guy or what, but they've also brought in a lot of great coordinators too, which Frank Wright went on to be a very good head coach. And Jim Schwartz, I think, was a good coordinator. I don't think you can argue that. He's a former head coach as well. So they've had success bringing guys in. At the end of the day, it's still pretty shocking that Doug Peterson, I think he forced his way out. I don't care what anybody says. Doug Peterson forced his way out. He put his foot down and said, look, I'm a Super Bowl winning head coach. I think I proved in those last four games to some extent that Carson Wentz was the problem, that was the reason the offense wasn't working. I think he said that flat out Mike Groh wasn't the issue either, because Carson Wentz was the quarterback back then and they were struggling back then. They just scapegoated Mike Groh as well. And I want to bring in my guy. Press Taylor's the quarterback's coach around the league. Typically quarterback's coaches are the guys that are moving up to offensive coordinator. That's typically how it goes around the league. Doug Peterson was a quarterback's coach before we hired him. Andy Reid was a quarterback's coach in Green Bay before we hired him. That's one of the stepping stones. If you want to move up in the NFL, position coaches, a lot of position coaches don't really move up that fast, but quarterbacks coaches are typically the guys that deal with the most important position in sports, hands-on, are typically the guys that move on to offensive coordinators and head coaches. John DeFilippo, before this, was the 2017 quarterbacks coach. He moved on to the Vikings to become the offensive coordinator. That didn't last. I think he became an offensive coordinator in Jacksonville as well. That didn't last either, but that's just typically how it goes. Typically, quarterbacks coaches are the guys that move up. So Doug was fighting for Press Taylor, but in reality he was fighting for himself. He didn't like the writing on the wall. He didn't like the game plan, which was, look, you're gonna get neutered publicly. We're gonna take away, you're a Super Bowl winning head coach. We don't even give you control of your roster on game day. We don't give you any decision making ability on your coaches around you. We don't give you any calls on who we're gonna draft. We take all that away from you. Even though most head coaches with Super Bowls have a lot of that stuff, we're not giving you any of that. We're going to neuter you behind the scenes to the point where you can't even do your job properly, because you don't think for a second that Doug Peterson got to pick his own players and he said, you know what, I'm going to take DK Metcalf and I'm going to take Justin Jefferson instead of JJ or Katie Whiteside and instead of Jalen Reagor. You don't think his offense would look a lot better right now? You know what I mean? It's like everybody talks about how the Eagles failed Carson Wentz. How about they fail how they failed Doug? Nobody ever mentions that. They failed Doug the same way. They could have got him better personnel. They could have got him a better left tackle solution going into the season rather than Jason Peters, who's almost 40 fucking years old, who can't even stay on the field. You don't think that was a failure? And then they brought him back for $8 million to play left tackle. There was a lot. You could have went and got anybody to do that. There was plenty of offensive linemen on the market that you could have picked up I mean, just not necessarily left tackles, but there were guards out there that you could have picked up. There was a lot of things you could have picked up that they couldn't do because their salary cap was so royally screwed up by Howie Roseman. And their draft picks were complete crap because of Howie Roseman. And somehow he's surviving all this while Doug Peterson's just standing up there at the podium game after game, just taking absolute shots from the media, trying to explain why this team is so bad, trying to explain unexplainable things that are being forced on him by the ownership, being things like Howie Roseman forcing Alshon Jeffrey on the roster, things like Howie Roseman forcing him to play ahead of Travis Fulgham, who had a 10-catch game against one of the best defenses in the entire NFL. He's on the bench now because you can't have two guys like that. You can't have two possession guys and run the offense. So you had to replace Travis Fulgham with Alshon Jeffrey because money. It was all because of money. There's a lot of decisions that are being made in the Philadelphia organization for years because that's where the money's allocated. We have to put this guy on the field because, I mean, in reality, they were not justifying paying Alshon Jeffrey. They were trying to play the long game where, look, if Alshon Jeffrey shows a little value, maybe we can trade him in the offseason and get out from more of his contract. That's really what they wanted to do. That was the whole game plan. And it was being forced on Doug game after game after game to put a guy out there that only caught 6 catches. Which in the amount of games he played comes out to an average about 1 catch a game. Alshon Jeffrey caught 6 balls where Travis Fulgham caught 10 in a single game, and they had to bench him because Howie Roseman and the management team or the ownership team were pushing it on Doug that, hey, look, we need to put Alshon Jeffrey coming off of a major injury so we can try to free up more cap space in the future. And Doug just played along. He just played ball all the way through, hoping it would have a good end on the other side, and it didn't. At the end of the day, they just turned on him, and they just threw him under the bus and got rid of him because he didn't play long enough to the point where they could replace him. Doug Peterson, as many faults as he has, and he has many, there's a lot of things I'm not going to miss about Doug. I'm not going to miss some of his play calling was bad. Sometimes he went for it. It just didn't make any sense. It's like, why are you going for it here? Like, it does. I liked it when he went for it. It made sense. There's a lot of times where he went for it. It didn't make any sense. No mathematical sense to go for two, or no real reason to not tie the game, like in the Washington game, where you could just kick the field goal and just tie the game. But at the end of the day, I mean, it seemed like he was playing for the loss. You know what I mean? That was he was playing along even there, where it was like, you know, I know this organization would rather have the sixth pick than the ninth. So we're just going to play for the loss here. And he played all the way through. He just played the sucker until they used him up and spit him out. And at the end of the day, I just think that they really mistreated the only Super Bowl winning head coach in the Eagles organization. The Eagles, without a doubt, I mean, they wouldn't have won a Super Bowl without Doug. A lot of people want to look at Frank Reich, and maybe it's right. Maybe at the end of the day, Doug was just the figurehead or just the guy who made the calls, sitting atop of two really good coordinators. And I said this all the way back when the Eagles went to the Super Bowl. I said, I mean, the Eagles had two things going for them against the Patriots. I felt like they had the best coaching staff. I mean, the Patriots had a better head coach. Nobody doubts that. Bill Belichick is the man. And Bill Belichick, he does a lot with very little. He's the real deal. There's no doubt about that. But going into that game, I knew the Eagles had the better coaching staff. The Patriots had a better head coach, but the Eagles had a much better coaching staff from the coordinators, the position coaches. They were loaded, and that's why so many of them got hired up by other teams after they won that Super Bowl. And the same thing went with the roster. The Eagles had a much better roster. The Patriots had a better quarterback, but Eagles had better pretty much everything else. And that was pretty much how they won that Super Bowl. So maybe Doug really didn't have as much to do with it. I mean, he didn't even really call like the biggest play in Eagles history. He didn't even really make that call. You know what I mean? Like Philly, you know what I mean? That was Nick Foles who came over and said Philly, and he was like, yeah, okay, let's do that. You know what I mean? I think that you can point out a lot of things and say maybe Doug wasn't really the genius behind it all. I mean, a lot of the times that they go for it, it's based off of analytics anyway. It isn't, I don't know, maybe he's doing it a couple times from the hip now because he's Dougie go for it. You know what I mean? He's Dougie Riverboat Gambler, and he's just like, cause like I said, a lot of times it doesn't make sense. A lot of times where they went for it in 2017, it seemed to make sense. It seemed to be analytically driven, where a lot of times now, it almost seems like, why are you doing this? I can't imagine that the analytics are telling you to go for two when it would put you up. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times it just didn't make any sense where he was going for two in scenarios where it didn't make sense to go for two, or he's going for touchdowns where it didn't necessarily make sense to go for touchdowns. A lot of things like that where you're really questioning. And then his inability to adjust at halftime seemed kind of glaring. I felt like for years he didn't do a really good job of scripting plays. I'm not really sure. I mean, this year they did a little bit. I don't know. It seemed like the same. Like the first, you know, they had issues in the past of just not scoring early in games, which really should be something that an offensive minded coach should really be able to script up. You have all week to script up plays against, you know, and game plan against defenses. You really should be getting more points in those first drives in the early in games than they were. So, I mean, I really can't say if you're just looking at it from the offensive perspective and Doug's ability, his ineffective ability to really get the offense going. You could argue that a lot of it was Wentz. I think there's plenty of evidence for that. He didn't play well. But at the same time, even when Doug had Jalen Hurts for those last four games, he still didn't score a 30-point game all year, which is the only team in the NFL not to do that. And you could say that that's really the biggest failure of Doug's career as an Eagles head coach, was the offense just really didn't look good the last couple years. But at the end of the day, he's more than that. And that's why I think the Eagles wanted to keep him there, is because he's fostered a culture in Philadelphia, a culture, a player. The players love him. The players play hard for him. I think that was one of his biggest strengths, and he could take that wherever he goes now in the future. He's going to insert that right away. He's gonna create a culture. I would hope of winning. I can't really say 100% sure if that's what he had here, but it seemed like a culture of winning for the short time that he was here. And he's gonna you know, the players are gonna play hard for him wherever he goes. He's a loved coach, and I think that the Eagles players are probably really sad to hear that he's gone. But without a doubt, I mean, there's definitely a lot of strengths that Doug had, and I think a lot of it was his relationship with players and the culture that he fostered, which I really think is going to be the biggest thing that's going to be missed now that he's going to Philadelphia, because you don't know who they're gonna bring in. They might bring in some ass like Chip Kelly, who was an absolute terrible. Nobody liked him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. I think that when they went with Chip Kelly, and I don't know, hopefully they go back to the college ranks too. If I were to say like who I would like to see, you know, maybe then bring up Lincoln Riley or something. I don't know. I mean, this is almost a reaction podcast. I didn't even really research head coaching candidates. I hear a lot of people talking about Eric Bieniemy from Kansas City, which, you know what, I wouldn't be mad about that. That's another guy from the Andy Reid head coaching tree. I think Eric Bieniemy might have been a running backs coach for us a long time ago. I'm not 100% sure, but I do remember him. I think he played one of his final years in Philadelphia as well, but obviously, I mean, he came up under Andy Reid, so he's going to be one of those guys who definitely, you know, he's going to do things very similarly. It's really going to be interesting to see who they get. That's the thing we have to remember. When they hired Doug was almost like the last option. Like, he was never really popular here from the management team or from the ownership team. They wanted a number of other guys. None of them worked out. Adam Gase, they tried for and they failed. They let him go, which everybody at the time was like, how can you let him go? I mean, that guy's terrible. The second one was they tried to run it back the Giants head coach. What's his name? He went to Tom Coughlin. They tried to run it back with Tom Coughlin. They tried to bring Tom Coughlin in at like 80 years old, and it didn't work out. And then they just kind of settled on Doug. I mean, they went around and around, and I think that they almost hired Tom Coughlin, I think. There was a story that he was like in a limo on the way, and then it like fell apart or something. I don't really remember. But at the end of the day, they almost hired somebody else, and then they ended up landing on Doug. And they never gave Doug the respect that he deserved. They never let him pick his coaching staff. I'm sure he brought in a couple guys he liked, but ultimately, you know, a lot of the coaches were already here when he got here. Deuce Staley was already here. I think Jim Schwartz was already here, if I remember correctly. But I know that when Jim Schwartz was here, that was like Jim Schwartz just said, don't even talk to me, bro. You know what I'm saying? You stay on your side of the building, I'm staying on my side of the building. Don't tell me nothing about defense. You know nothing about defense. That was what, like, Jim Schwartz's whole thing. So even when Jim Schwartz was failing a lot of the fan base was like, dude, when's this guy going to be more aggressive? You know what I mean? And you couldn't even get Doug to go talk to him because Doug was not even allowed to go near that side of the building, the defensive side. So Doug never got the respect that he deserved as a Super Bowl winning head coach. He never got, you know, a lot of guys won less, like Chip Kelly won less, and he was picking his own players, he was making his own trades, all of which, you know, obviously he did such a horrible job that I think the Eagles decided we're never going to let a coach do that again. I think that was kind of the reason that Doug never got more control of things like that. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, that's just how it worked out. Doug never really had the ability. I mean, we, like I said, if he had DK Metcalf and he had, you know, Justin Jefferson, his offense would look a lot better too if they would have did a better job of surrounding his team with talent and not messing the team up with horrible contracts. I mean, I don't know how Howie Roseman survives this. If you got rid of Doug, and Carson Wentz is still a possibility. I mean, I still think that there's a chance that they could just try to keep Carson Wentz because, you know, I mean, I think if they do keep Carson Wentz, that might be even a bigger nightmare. If they keep Carson Wentz and they just basically chose him over Doug and they're like, you know, we're going to see what we can get, because that's what it looks like. We're going to see what we can get out of Carson if we can get a real offensive guy here. I would almost like Joe Brady from Carolina, by the way. That's another one. If they brought in like somebody like that with a really great offensive mind, like we're going to fix Carson Wentz with a real coach. Well, how much does Carson Wentz have like control over the next coach now? I mean, you see Deshaun Watson getting upset because they hired, what was it, a GM without him, without his say, and he now apparently he wants out. What, you're going to trust Carson Wentz? Carson Wentz might really be the problem. He might really be broken. He might really be the issue. So you're going to let him pick the next head coach? I mean, that's a really sticky situation that they're getting into now, where they might let Carson Wentz have too much say, which already sounded like it was an issue in the past. I mean, the story came out that Carson Wentz was bullying Mike Groh in 2018, that he was, you know, he was having too much say over what was being run. These are all arguments I'm sure Doug was making, which is Carson was the problem in the first place. So now you're basically, you know, Doug's out of the picture. You basically chose to go away from him and essentially go with Carson, from what it looks like. And now you're looking at it like, all right, well, so Carson was, I mean, Doug has success without Carson. There's no doubt about that. His record without Carson was like 11-5, and his record with Carson was like 33-35. So there's definitely plenty of reason to say that you shouldn't let Carson just call the shots, because obviously he had, when he was playing, he was calling more shots. He was calling more plays. He had more say, more input in the offense, and it wasn't working. So you can't just flip it and go with the position that Carson Wentz should have more say over the next coaching hire, because that's just a recipe for failure. I don't know what to make of Jalen Hurts either. I mean, if Carson Wentz has that much control, maybe he says, I want Jalen Hurts out of here, which is also would be a mistake, which I can't really agree with either. So, I mean, like I said, Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, I mean, this is keep it about him. Doug Peterson essentially got fired because he didn't want to play himself any longer. I mean, let's just call it what it was. He didn't want to just keep walking the line to his own. He's basically walking off a plank. And the Eagles were just feeding him. They were just feeding him a line straight off a plank. And Doug's like, why am I going to do this? Why am I just going to keep coming here? I won a Super Bowl. I'm sure he's got feelers out around the league. And the people around the league are probably telling him, like, you know what? These guys would hire you in a heartbeat. This such and such would hire you in a heartbeat. And he's going to have a job really fast. There's a lot of teams out there that are just directionless, clueless. They don't have near the culture culture of winning, the culture of, you know, togetherness, and that Doug would immediately bring to a team. So he's easily going to find a job, and I can't wait to see what job he ends up with, and I hope he does well, you know, for the only Eagles Super Bowl winning head coach in history to get done like this is not a really good look. But everybody has faults. I mean, Doug's at fault. Carson's at fault. Howie's at fault. That's why it makes sense to just start over and get rid of everybody. And it seems like they're taking half measures. They're going to get rid of one and not the other. And I kind of understand that. I kind of understand trying to get Carson Wentz back to 2017 MVP form, because that is a really big deal. And Carson Wentz is going to have all the opportunity to do that, because I can guarantee you they're going to take a receiver with the number 6 pick. I can guarantee that. You can write that down right now. They are going to take whoever the best receiver is at number 6. They might even move up, for all I know, for Jamar Chase, if that's the case. But they're going to take a receiver at number 6. You can write that down right now. And I can almost guarantee you that Carson Wentz will probably have a better year going forward, because they're going to be playing a much easier schedule this next season. They have a last-place schedule now, which was in 2017 what they had when Carson Wentz went off. So they're going to get a top-notch receiver. They're going to, if they bring Carson Wentz back, they're going to have a new coach, hopefully a bright offensive-minded coach, which I'm sure they're not going to bring in a defensive coach. That's not what the league is anymore. It's about offensive mind. So they're going to hire somebody, a great offensive mind, to pair with Carson Wentz and to pair with Jalen Hurts. I think the Eagles are still going to have a bright future. Getting rid of Doug Peterson does not, at the very least, it sends a message to the people in the locker room as well, which is, you know, time to fix this, because when the head coaches' heads are rolling, nobody's safe. The salary cap dictates as much anyway. So, like I said, there's going to be a lot of veterans gone in the next couple of weeks to months. There's going to be a lot of roster turnover. There's going to be a lot of differences, but it's almost looking like it's not going to be Carson Wentz. And I'm not really sure the direction of this team right now. But as of right now, the biggest news is Doug Peterson is out as head coach. It's a sad day because he was a very likable guy, and you almost felt bad for him, taking just bullets after bullets. He's just up there taking shots from the reporters after every game, trying to explain stuff that he couldn't explain. He never had control of half the stuff he should have had control over. And I hope whatever team he goes to in the future, he gets full control. And I hope he wins another Super Bowl somewhere else and sticks it to the Eagles, because Doug deserved better than what he got. But there is a case to be made that he was always kind of a bumbling, you know, maybe he wasn't the great offensive mind or the great head coach. He was just a lovable guy who, you know, was definitely a gutsy guy. I mean, he had a lot of great moments, but he had a lot of bad moments too, which really made you question how good he really was. And now that he's gone, I mean, only the future will decide. Only time will tell. But you know, sad day in Philly that Carson Wentz is, or I'm sorry, not Carson Wentz. I was so ready to say Carson Wentz would be gone soon. Now it's looking like he's not. But it's a sad day that Doug Peterson is gone, and it's all because he stood his ground and didn't want to let them keep pushing him around anymore. They didn't want to keep letting bringing in, you know, coordinators that he had no control over. He didn't want to keep letting them bring in, you know, I mean, if you're going to let a guy be on the hot seat and fight for his job one last year, you should give him the full opportunity. Let him bring in his own guys. Let him institute his own offense. Let him make his own calls. Let him bring in his own draft picks. Let him bring in his own free agents. We'll never know what would have happened if Doug Peterson ran the show. That's the saddest part. If Doug had full control the same way Chip Kelly had full control, maybe this team would have won multiple Super Bowls. We'll never know that. Maybe they wouldn't have won any. We'll never know that. You know what I mean? That's the thing. But Doug definitely, I trust Doug more than Howie, and Howie's still here. Howie, who's done a pretty good job in the past at times, but so has Doug. Carson Wentz, who's done a pretty good job in the past at times, but so has Howie. You know what I mean? It's like all three of them they've committed the same sins, but only one of them's gone so far. They should all be gone. If you're going to fire Doug for not being more consistent, which one of those three guys is consistent for you? Carson Wentz, who's only had one good year. I mean, you could say he's had some average years, but for the most part, he's had two bad years. His rookie year was a bad year. This last year was a bad year. I made a case that he got benched the year that he had his back injury. He probably could have kept playing, but he was playing so poorly and the season was over that they figured to put him on ice. But at the end of the day, he could have kept playing with that back injury. So you could say that he was benched that year. That was, what, 2018? So you have those issues. Then you have, Howie Roseman only really had one great year. I mean, he's picked good coaches. So this will be the fourth coach that he's picked. And every one of them, I think, at least won the division once, two of which have won Super Bowls in their career. So he does a pretty good track record of picking coaches. And he has a pretty good track record of money, although lately he's just been handing out horrible contract after horrible contract. So it's hard to make that case. He's still good with money. So, I mean, they should all be gone. That's how I feel. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I feel like you could just get rid of all of them and I wouldn't shed a tear and just start it over with Jalen Hurts, a new GM and a new coach. It would be refreshing to say the very least. And now it feels like we're just going to come back and try to do the same thing just with a new head coach. And this new head coach, he's walking into a minefield. Hopefully he comes in with his chin up and is ready to take some shots. And hopefully they bring in a real strong head coach too. They need an alpha male head coach. They need a guy that'll come up here from the jump and stand up to Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman, because I've said in podcasts in the past that Jeffrey Lurie is more of a problem than is being let on. He is a meddlesome owner. If he wasn't a meddlesome owner, he would have let Doug do his job. If he wasn't a meddlesome owner, and he stuck his fingers into him and Howie, who are joined at the hip. You can't keep separating them. They're joined at the hip. Him and Howie are the same guy. Okay. Jeffrey Lurie just hides behind Howie. Howie is his shield. Howie takes all the shots for being a horrible GM, but Jeffrey Lurie's right there making the decisions. He's right there making the calls. Howie Roseman is just his right hand man. And at the end of the day, if you want to get rid of Howie, you really have to get torches and pitchforks and be knocking down Jeffrey Lurie's door and saying, we want change. We want something new. That's the only way you're ever going to get rid of Howie. So without a doubt, I mean, whenever they get a new coach, I'll be making a podcast. I'll be making a podcast probably once a week about the Eagles throughout the offseason here. But I'm going to end this podcast because I try to keep this around a half an hour. And like I said, I'm definitely a little bit disappointed that Doug's gone. But I don't think as I reflect upon it, I just don't think that him being gone really changes the future that much. Because at the end of the day, they were going to hire an offensive guy to try to kind of take Doug's play calling anyway. So what's the loss? If Doug wasn't really calling plays on offense and he wasn't going to be calling plays on defense because they're going to bring in another defensive guy, what does Doug really do here other than just foster a culture? Which, like I said, that's going to be sadly missed. But, we're going to see what happens. So new coaches everywhere, all around, coordinators. We'll see how many position guys go as well. Hopefully they don't get rid of Jeff Stoutland. That guy's my favorite on the offensive side. I think he did a pretty good job as a line coach. But other than that, there's going to be a lot of changes, a lot of roster turnover going forward. And we're going to cover it all here. So if you're still listening, thanks for listening. This has been episode 8 of Philadelphia Eagles Talk, and I'll catch you guys next time.